All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
And I'm Lee White.
And I'm Will Terry. All three of us are professional illustrators, and for the past 25 years, we've all worked with all the major publishers and publications in the business. We've published over 50 books, and all of us have taught at universities.
Each week, we tackle a subject related to illustration from three perspectives. Sometimes we agree, most of the time we argue, but every time you learn something new.
All right, good intro, guys. Okay, today we are talking about, are you too old to shift your career from whatever it is you're doing into art? Are you too old to start being an artist? Are you too old to start that big project that you've always wanted to work on? So that's the subject. And I want to ask you guys, what is the average age, would you say, most professionals start working?
Like when they actually start getting work? Is that your...
Yeah, when they start getting work, what's the norm?
I'd say 23. 23 to 25 is kind of where I see the general average.
Mm-hmm.
What about for you, Will?
That's a hard question, because I've known people that are definitely older, and I've also known a lot of people that they'll graduate college and then they'll go get a job that's related to illustration, doing something mm-hmm. like working as a graphic designer maybe, or maybe they're like, I know one guy who actually like painted little figurines for years before he really started his illustration career. So I think a lot, if you're talking about job or free, I think you're talking about freelance, right?
I'm talking about freelance, or if you wanted to become an animator, getting a job in an animation studio, if you want to be a comic book artist, getting a job drawing mm-hmm. comics, illustrator, like getting your first children's book illustration job, like for the bell curve. I know there's people on the edges who, you know, some person out there who's 17 getting work, right?
Right.
Like Joe Madureira, comic artist, started drawing X-Men, which was like Marvel's like top book at the time. And he started drawing it at 17. He drew his first issue at the age of 17.
Wow.
Right. I know. So you got that end of the bell curve. And then you've got the other end where there's like, I was just reading and preparing for this podcast, I was reading about a guy who wrote his first novel at 96 and it became a bestseller, 96 years old. So that middle of the bell curve, the average most people, I agree with Lee, like if you're growing up, you're into art, you're practicing all through school, you go to art school, you do well at art school, you get out, you're probably 23 to 25 getting your first illustration jobs, turning it into a career.
Probably about right. That's about how old I was.
Okay.
When I got my first ones. But I know that there are exceptions, but I do know that quite a few people who started in their late 20s and early 30s getting work.
Right. But would you say most people start their illustration career at 40?
I know you want me to say that.
No, I don't. I don't care what you say. I just want to know what you think.
I don't know. Probably. I'll say probably.
We're going to kick you off this podcast. It's going to be 2-point perspective.
I mean, I think it's a good topic because I think the... Like we're saying, I think the average is mid-20s or something where you kind of start to hit the ground, run in, get a couple of jobs and stuff. But I think everybody else, either when you're really young or older than that, always feels a little self-conscious about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we see it a lot on the forum where people are like, am I too old to even mess with this? And it happens mm-hmm. a lot. And they're kind of sitting there going, you know, how long is this actually going to take? And younger people are like, oh, am I too young to dive in?
I agree. And I know, like... I remember being in my 20s thinking, you know, when am I going to start working or when am I going to get that big job that I want to get? I remember thinking like the clock's ticking. Even now I'm 40 years old now. And I still think like, am I too old to be doing some things, right? Am I too old to embark upon this big project that I want to do? So I think it's something that, regardless of the age, you still might be feeling like comparing yourself to others and thinking, oh, that 30-year-old who's super successful, like I'm a little bit jealous of them and wishing that I had done that when I was, you know, 30 or 31. But I think I wanted to share some examples of people who started late and found like success in the later years in their life, just to outline that, yeah, this is possible. If you're 40 years old or, you know, 35 or whatever, and you're thinking, oh, I want to do illustration, these guys might be inspiration for you thinking that this could be possible. So the first one is a guy named Sang Joon, who's a guy I actually worked with at Blue Sky Studios in animation. And he was in the art department, and we were talking one day, and it came to find out that he didn't start drawing until he was in his 20s, well into his 20s. And he realized like he really loved drawing. And so he started practicing. He ended up going to art school. Outside of art school, he got a job at Lucasfilm. He worked on Episode 3 as a character designer for Star Wars and worked on a bunch of other stuff. And then when I met him, he had been at Blue Sky for about a year as one of our lead character designers. And he was in his 40s at that time. So what that taught me from him was like, okay, you don't have to be like this phenom who's drawing everything at 17 and getting into art school and, you know, in your early 20s or late teens and just diving into it, that if you have that interest and if you have that time and ability, you can pursue it. I know you, Lee, you started a little bit late as well, right?
Yep. I started, I wasn't even drawing in my 20s or teens. I never drew anything ever. I mean, mm-hmm. I had no interest in art at all. So it's not like it was something I was kind of even dabbling with. And yeah, I was 30 before I even kind of picked up a paper. I was right at the tail end of 29. I thought I'll do some paintings. And that body of work I sent to Art Center College of Design. And that's when I got accepted and got a scholarship. And I just moved down to LA, went to school. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. And, you know, so that means that puts me at, you know, 33 to graduate. And, you know, here I am at, I'm only 35 now. No, I'm just kidding. I've been doing it for a little while now, but you know, it never mattered to me that I was a little bit late. You know, a lot of the students at Art Center had gone to other colleges and actually have had other careers for a little while and then decided to go back to school. So the average age at Art Center was a little bit older anyway, not as old as I was, but 25, 26 was an average age, I think, in there. But, you know, and once I got out and got my first books, I was in my mid-30s, and, you know, I thought, okay, this is it. Finally, I'm getting into it. Now I look back on those books, and I was just getting started at that point. I mean, my work looks nothing like that did. Mm-hmm. And so everything, you know, I continued to learn over time. It never stopped, and it wasn't like, whoo, I got in under the deadline. It's just this kind of this ongoing thing.
Yeah, yeah. So Lee's a great example of that. Here's a couple other people you might have heard of. So Miyazaki, Hayao Miyazaki, who's a Japanese animation director, famous for Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away. He's basically, they've called him like the Walt Disney of Japan, even though he's way more of a curmudgeon than I think Walt Disney was. But he was in animation all throughout his you know, his career up until about 40. And that's when he decided to start his own animation studio. Right. And I believe his first film before he even started the animation studio was Nausicaä. That wasn't done for Studio Ghibli, but Nausicaä was based on a graphic novel that he started also at age 40. So at age 40, he started the graphic novel and he wanted to make a feature film from it. And since then, all the great Miyazaki movies that have been made were done post 40 years old. So I look at that and I think, okay, you know, if you're 40, you still have 20 years, 25 years before the average typical age of retirement. That's a lifetime.
Yeah, that's a huge amount of time to make stuff. I mean,
yep. The other thing is, it's like making art isn't like, you know, playing football. It's like, it's not like it's hard on your bones, right? Like, so, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I don't ever really plan on retiring. You know,
I don't see retiring. Hey, just one little note about Miyazaki, if I can mm-hmm. kind of divert the conversation just for a second. Mm-hmm. Have you guys seen the clip of Miyazaki doing the critique of the movie studio or the film studio that came up with the zombies.
Yes. Yes.
So Miyazaki got invited. I don't know if it was his company or another company that's making these basically software that you can program in all these, like, kind of like, I think the example that they were using was zombies, and it brought a different kind of movement to the zombies and stuff. And they were really excited about it. And the zombies were super creepy in the way that they were moving around. And he gave, if you've ever think you've gotten a harsh critique, please look up this video, because he rips into this whole studio saying this is an abomination to life itself. That's part of his critique.
Wow. He was like, why would you want to create something like this, you know?
Yeah.
And he said, he even said, like, I have a friend who suffers from a disability, and this is an offense to him in the way that those bodies are moving, you know? And you should have, like, the guys were so happy to show, like, their sensei, right? Miyazaki, look at what we've created. And their faces just drop. They're like pale white, you know, the blood just rushed out of their face, and he just rips into them. Yeah, that's a good one.
Was he right?
It depends on your viewpoint. I mean, it was really weird.
If you like zombies, you probably think they're awesome.
Let me interject somebody here. Mm-hmm. Going along with this idea of, you know, as you mature, you know, your art matures, like you were saying, Lee, right? Your books today look totally different than they used to.
Yeah.
And I remember when Greg Manches came out and gave a lecture at BYU probably 12, 13 years ago. He had just done the cover of the book that was just published this year, Above the Timberline, or last year. Mm. And he mentioned in there, you know, so he unveiled that as one of his slides. And it's, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can look it up, Above the Timberline. But it's a picture of an adventurer with polar bears, and they're climbing this snowy hill with mountains in the background. And he made the comment that he said, now keep in mind, he was winning awards at the Society of Illustrators and Communication Arts magazine for years. And he said 10 years ago, and that was 10 years ago when he was winning those awards, he said, 10 years ago, I could not have painted this. Mm. And that blew me away. I was like, wow. So when I was studying you in school, when I was still in school, you were doing award-winning work, and you are telling me now that you couldn't have done this even when you were winning those awards. And it just told me that, you know, and I think at that time he was probably about 50, and I think he's probably in his early 60s now, maybe.
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah.
It just tells me that if you really are serious about being an artist and creating the best art that you're capable of creating, you have to look at it as a lifelong goal, and you can't really. So this, which goes into kind of another thing, which is if you put a timeline on, I've got to be making money with my art by this date, I think you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're not allowing the natural processes of art creation to work. Mm-hmm. You know,
I think that's fair. I think you also need a schedule for yourself.
Sure.
Too. I mean, I'm the type of person that if I don't set up like an actual goal and have something to look forward to, then it won't ever happen. Like, I will never get there.
Just don't judge your results based on that timeline. You know, like not the results, but you can judge. What you can control is how hard you work.
Yeah.
How long you work, when you start working.
Right. I always go back to the quote where, you know, say you're 30 or 35 and you feel too old, you know, the quote that, you know, 5 years are going to pass anyway, you're going to be 40 at some point. Wouldn't you mm-hmm. rather have done something interesting with those 5 years between 35 mm-hmm. and 40 and tried to do this thing? Cause it's going to pass. The time passes anyway. You might as well do it.
There's another question to interject is, do you guys think that someone starting later, would the art that they create be the exact same art they would have created 20 years earlier?
Absolutely not. I mean, you come to it with a ton of experience. I mean, that's the beauty of coming to art later, because you've got this wealth of, you've had jobs, you've lost jobs, you've had relationships, you've lost relationships, and all that kind of plays into, I think, a more informed kind of art. You know, I don't know if you guys experienced this, but teaching full time at the university, I had students all different ages, and typically my better students in terms of the content of the work was the older students.
Yep.
I think also too, you've figured out how to work. You should have by that age. You know, you have a good work ethic, and you know you don't quit until the job's done. You know that because you've lived through a certain amount of life, you just know, okay, I have to do something 100 times before it starts to feel natural a little bit. So you're not getting frustrated.
I have to bring up Gina Jean.
Okay.
So I had her in class at UVU. She's, I would say, maybe in her early 40s, mid 40s, something like that. I'm guessing. I hope I'm not way off.
Never guess a woman's age.
I know. It's bad. But to help people out there that might be, you know, not in their 20s or 30s anymore, you know, she came back to school and she turned in some of the best projects in the class, and she was the most insecure. She came up to me on the first day of class and just said, I don't know if I should be here at all. I haven't done this forever. I've been doing kind of graphic design stuff, but not drawing. I'm very embarrassed to put my stuff up. And what was interesting was the first few assignments she put up really did show that she hadn't been drawing. But the thing she did was she had the work ethic like you're talking about. And she worked so hard at hitting all the things I was trying to teach, all the principles, that she turned in easily a couple of the best pieces in the class. And so if someone is contemplating like and asking themselves, am I too old? I think you should feel like you can accelerate your learning just from your experiences.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Well, to add to Will's, another thing that I noticed about older students versus young students is that older students are okay with learning something without the instant gratification of it either showing up in the work immediately or just going through the exercise for another motive, like learning perspective. It seems like younger students were a little bit reluctant to it, or kind of, you know, it seemed like eating your broccoli to them. The older students ate it up because they're like, oh my gosh, I can use this here, 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 and here. And it might not be a payoff right at this very moment because I'm struggling with it, but I understand where it's going. And that kind of just broader perspective didn't happen with the younger students. They're like, oh, this sucks. This isn't creative. I want to do what I want to do. And it's just, that was a big shift I noticed between the younger and older students.
Yeah, that's really good. So I want to talk about developing, I guess, to bring the most value to people listening to this. What would be a good battle plan if you've decided, you know what, I'm 35, last 15 years I've been installing home theaters, and I've always loved kind of drawing on the side, and I want to make it my main gig. What would be a good battle plan for this person starting at 35, 36, moving forward? What would be the first thing that they would want to that they would want to do? I guess, what would be year one for this person? I have my own ideas. Should I just go into those ideas?
Well, you can go ahead and we'll add to it.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, so year one, your first thing isn't going to be like making anything cool. Year one is going to be mastering your craft. That's all you got to focus on in year one. And so I think in this first year, definitely going to want to keep your day job because no one's going to hire you right away to draw anything. But I would say each day out of the week, set aside 2 hours to just focus on your craft. Draw for 2 hours a day. I would say also in that first year, enroll into some sort of class. You could be at your local community college. It could be online. There's schools like svslearn.com, which we all participate in, that teach basic fundamentals. I know there's Schoolism and CGMA also teach. There might be a little bit more advanced, but what you're looking for when you're enrolling into these classes is you're looking for classes that teach you fundamentals, the fundamentals of art, beginning classes just to brush up if you've maybe distanced yourself from art over the years, or you're coming at it fresh. And what are the fundamentals you're going to want to learn? Perspective, light and shadow, composition, some figure drawing, you know, anatomy, those types of things. How to draw hands, heads. You're going to want to learn color. What else? How to use line, shape, and tone in your work. What other fundamentals? Those are pretty much like the core ones, right? Okay, so then you've got you're setting aside 2 hours for like drawing and practicing. You're setting aside time for instruction. And then what I want you to do, or what I think you should do, is fill in this first year, fill six to seven 100-page sketchbooks. And that could be like what you do in your 2 hours of drawing, is you're filling these sketchbooks and you're going to put in there hand studies, head studies, figure studies, landscape studies, perspective studies, shading studies, all those kinds of things. Like your sketchbook is just your sandbox for practicing and doing all these things that you're learning in your classes that you're doing. So on top of that, choose five of your favorite artists. And in that year, you could spread it out maybe to a month, do 20 copies, maybe not to a month, but do, I don't know, you could figure out the math. I'm not a mathematician. But you're going to do 20 copies from each of these five artists. So that's 100 copies. And these can also be things that you do in your sketchbook as well. And they don't have to be like exact painted copies if you pick a painter. But what you want to get used to is, how do they understand light and shadow? How do they do perspective or composition? And each copy that you make, whether you're just doing, you know, a shrunken down sketch study in your sketchbook, or you're trying to do an actual replica, you're going to learn so much from just going through the motions of trying to deconstruct what that artist did. You know, your first 10 are going to be horrible. Your first 50 are going to be horrible, but maybe by that 100th one, it might actually start looking really good.
Now, when you say they don't have to be exact copies, as a teacher, I start to worry, because you know how, you know what I mean? Like, and yeah, I see Lee over there.
Yeah. I mean, my criteria for the master study was I shouldn't be able to tell them apart.
Yeah. But I think that's something that you can do maybe after you've been doing it.
That should be your ideal.
Right.
The ideal, because like you're not going to be perfect right away, but if you give yourself like, this doesn't have to look anything like this, then, you know, like you need to know that, that if you went to a school like the New York Academy of Art and you did a master copy in class, if you got accepted into that school, they would be looking for an exact copy. Like, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I could tell the difference in my class, it automatically dropped to a B or lower.
Mm. Okay. So shoot for not getting a B or lower with your copies. Honestly, I kind of feel like it's the spirit of that rule versus the letter of it. Like, the spirit of it is you just want to learn how that artist did it. Right. And if you can pick it up and, you know, maybe this is part of it too. Like, if it becomes so much of a drag that you're dreading it,
right?
Then maybe change the assignment somewhat, so you could be like, well, this is a piece I made based off of this piece, or this is, you know, I copied just the characters from this piece and not the entire like background.
Well, it's tough though.
If
they're picking the artist and it's moving them in a direction that they feel is important to them, if they're met with dread, then we've already got a problem.
Right. And every student is different. And so we try to apply these same rules to everybody, but everybody's starting in a different place.
Right.
It's so I get where you're going, Jake. You're like, right. Now look, we don't want to scare off the person who's really having a hard time with this. Just knowing where the goal is and also knowing that you've got a lifetime to perfect this, right?
Well, and also realize, like to speak to Jake's point, you are going to fail at some of these. I mean, that's just that you're not going to be able to copy John Singer Sargent perfectly the first time. If you could, then you're a prodigy and you're different than all of us. I mean, that's part of the learning process.
You know, that's exactly, going back to Greg Manches, that's how he learned to paint, is he fell in love with Sargent paintings and he would go to the museums and try to figure out which stroke came first based on looking at right up close with a magnifying glass going, this paint drug through that paint stroke. So that one went on first. What about what was under that? and trying to figure out, like, in order to paint this face, it was very minimalistic paint strokes, because John Singer Sargent painted really painterly, and that's Greg Manchus's style. Mm-hmm. And the important thing there for me in hearing him talk about his deconstruction of Sargent was how he understood, in order for him to paint like that, he had to be in his head as much as he could without being able to interview him, without being, you know, he was long gone. And anyway, that was neat to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool. I've got one. Cool. I want to kind of shift that first year just a little bit, or ask you guys a question, because I don't know where I land on this, but I want to throw it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I used to kind of give the same general direction in classes, whether it's online or whether I'm teaching at school. And I started to notice that it, depending on where the goal is, that maybe that should change a little bit. Because some people may be coming at illustration as almost a graphic designer. Like look at John Klassen, like, would be a great example. Mm-hmm. If somebody's looking to do this really heavily stylized, non-perspective kind of drawing, should they have to go all the way around and learn all about all this other stuff, and then try to come back to the simplified style of drawing that is not based on that? And what scares me about that is sometimes it's really hard to come back once you've learned all the perspective and all the figure painting and all this stuff, to actually get back to that simplified graphic design style is very, very hard to do. One person I think of when I'm kind of mentioning this idea of this, of learning things can actually derail you, or depending on the direction can derail you, was Craig Mullins. If you guys know him, he's a fantastic, very painterly painter, even though he paints digitally, working in the entertainment industry. And he went to Art Center and studied industrial design and went all the way through 4 years or whatever, however long it took him, went through the whole program. And when he got done, he's like, you know what? This drawing style is way too slick. It looks too methodical, I guess. And then he went through 4 years of the illustration program just to try to get rid of the industrial design look.
Wow.
Mm.
And so he was coming out extremely powerful because he had all the drawing skills. Right. Not that I'm recommending anyone do that method, but I'm just saying, you know, that's the long way around. If somebody's going to do that simplified style, should they make that first year line up with that goal, or should everybody study the same foundation?
That's a
good question. This might be part of your first year thing as well, is to seek advice from a professional and just say, you know, hey, this is what I want to do. These are my goals. What do you think I should do? Because I don't want to give that specific advice to somebody. I don't want that to be broad advice. Like, if you want to do Harry Potter book cover style, Marie Grand Prix, then forget the perspective. You don't need to learn that. Because I kind of feel like you do want to learn it so that you know how to fudge it. You know how to do it in interesting ways. That's a good question.
Well, we're gonna give Will's email. And so if you have questions about what path you should take, just email Will.
Mm-hmm. It'll be in the show notes. But I think going right along with that is, you've got your five artists, you're doing your studies of them, your copies. But I think the other thing you need to do, and this is interesting, when I meet students who want to be children's book illustrators, and I'm like, great, who's your favorite children's book illustrator? Marie Sendak.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, who's your favorite illustrator from the last 5 years?
Really haven't been watching. They really haven't been looking.
And I think different genres or different mediums sort of have different people, I think, follow them a little bit more than others. Like, if you meet a comic book artist, they could probably tell you 10 comic book artists that they love. But illustration is such a broad thing that I think what you need to do in that first year is educate yourself on what you want to get into. So if it is children's book illustration, then every week check out children's books from the library and just study them and read them. Maybe do 5 a week and go through them. If it's comics that you want to get into, know what's going on in the comics and look at not just what happened 20 years ago in comics, but what's happening today in comics. So that should be like a part of this year one curriculum, is is filling your creative bank account with what these people in the industry are already doing. And then the last thing on this list, to-do list for year one, is state your goal publicly. I want to be a children's book illustrator in 5 years, you know, or 3 years, whatever it is. Share it with people in your life, but also share it online and set up your social media in a way that you could share your progress in what you're doing. Now, this is something that you just are doing as a groundwork, I think, to kind of give you some accountability. Because, you know, I said I'm going to do this and I might let down people, or I don't want to be a person that goes against what I said. And it's not so much as doing it to get followers. It's just as a way to post your progress more for yourself than for anybody else. You will get followers. If you post regularly and show your work and teach people what you're learning as you go, you're going to get people who want to follow along on your journey. But that's secondary to you just using it as maybe a journal to chart your progress so you could see where you've been, but also to keep you publicly accountable in what you're planning on doing. All right, so that's year one. And maybe your year one takes 2 years. Maybe it takes 3 years. But that is, we should call it that. That's your phase one, is master your craft, okay? Phase two, and you know, if you're super motivated and you have the time to do it, it could take a year. But moving on, once you've done that, your next phase is to build your portfolio, okay? So now you're upping it. You're not just doing 2 hours a day. Now maybe you're doing 4 hours a day, all right? And you're taking your classes to the next level. So instead of beginning classes, now you're doing intermediate classes. And a lot of these online schools, even at svslearn.com, we have more advanced classes as well. So now you're into these more advanced classes, and maybe you're taking some live classes where you're getting some one-on-one interaction with the teachers. And you're also going to dial back on your sketchbook now. Before, you're filling sketchbook just with all kinds of different things. You're going to dial back on your sketchbooks. You're only going to try to want to fill 4 sketchbooks this year. And this time it's not studies. It's not hand drawings. It's not head studies. It's not, you know, landscape studies or perspective. It's going to be concept art for whatever it is that your portfolio is going to be. So if you want to be an illustrator, you're going to fill it with ideas for your children's books that you want to do, or illustrations that you want to do. If you're a comic artist, it's ideas for characters that you want to draw. It's your version of Wolverine or whatever. Okay. One thing I would suggest you do now in the second phase is the Draw 100 Somethings project. And I have a YouTube channel that I talked about this. But what it is you pick one narrow subject matter like boats, and then you design 100 different boats, or maybe it's trees or flowers, and you design 100 different flowers. I did it. It was little robot, like gummy robot guys. I designed one of them, and I took the same face and the same sort of rounded style and did 100 different iterations of it. And I've seen other artists do like 100 different spaceships, 100 different like dinosaur designs, things like that, 100 different robot designs. So what you want to do, and what this thing is going to teach you, if you're whether you're an illustrator, whether you're a comic artist, whether you want to be a concept artist, anything like that, is it teaches you to not be satisfied with the first 2 or 3 or 20 designs that you do, but to teach you that the true creativity comes when you have completely drained all of the easy low-hanging fruit, and now you got to go digging around and finding inspiration and trying to do things that you never would have figured out to do in those first 20 passes.
Now, what did you do when you got to 100?
When I did it to 100, I thought, okay, I actually was so full of ideas that I had at least another 20 or 30 to do after 100. And I ended up doing 200 when I was all said and done, just to prove that I could do, like, there was no end to the amount of ideas that could be done. So
it's pretty amazing. If you haven't seen that, it's on your YouTube channel, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just do a search for Draw 100 Somethings. Okay. So the other thing you're going to want to start doing, so you're drawing 4 hours a day, you're doing sketchbooks full of your art and your designs, you're doing the 100 Somethings project, you're taking more advanced classes. What I want you to do is continue studying, whether it's children's books, or if you're going into film, you want to be a concept artist or an animator, you're studying animated films or films that are heavy on the concept art, you're getting the art of books that go to those films, and you're not just flipping through them, but you're reading every word that every artist says in there about the work that they created. If it's comic books, you're still studying your comic books. So you're still studying and you're still learning. And then on the social media front, I want you to post your 100-somethings as you're creating them in this next phase. Post your sketchbook drawings. And just share with people, here's what you're doing now. Again, for accountability, but also at this point, you could start growing a following behind your work, because now it's less about you practicing and mastering the craft, and it's more about you sharing your ideas and what's unique about what you're bringing to this field that you're entering into. You guys have anything else to add to this second phase?
I do. Of course, we always have stuff to add. one thing I wanted to mention, and this could be started in year one. This can even start right now before year one, if you're still having to adjust things in your schedule or wherever to get started. I want you guys to start paying attention to stories, not just in entertainment, but in your own life, like how things are working out. Because ultimately, I agree with everything Jake's saying about year one and two, just you owning your craft and getting really good at it. At a certain point, you will be able to bang out 200 spaceships with no problem, and 400 even if you wanted to. At the end of the day, what's going to start to separate you is the stories you tell, and mm-hmm. how you observe stories. Once you really start paying attention to what something is about, not how pretty it is, because as artists, we come to it and, you know, we see explosions and cool set designs and great lighting, and you get kind of enamored with that. And just being the ability to back up and say, what am I looking at? What was that whole thing about? Is a key kind of thing, because that's going to set, everybody's going to be able to draw at some point. Everybody's going to be able to paint. And so your stories are what's going to separate you from the next person and the stories you mm-hmm. want to tell. And one of the examples I use when I'm giving this lecture in class is, you know, something like as big as like the Star Wars universe, for example. I mean, there's so much going on there, you know, that there's politics and there's good and evil and different planets and all this stuff. But ultimately the core, if you look at the first Star Wars, and all the way up and through at least 8, it's about a family. It's about Darth Vader being a dad and his son and his sister. And it really is a family drama. And that's the basis of it. Like that, if you look mm-hmm. at it, start to look at it, what is the story about, as separate from the mm-hmm. details and all the special effects and all that kind of stuff. And so when I go to a movie, that's what I always talk about with my friends or my wife is not necessarily what specifically happened, but the broader view. What was the story about and how did they tell that story? And you can really get some great insights to storytelling and story building and making your own stories by doing that kind of careful analysis.
I think that's really important. And I'm a little embarrassed that I kind of overlooked that side of it. But yeah, you don't want to just be a vapid artist, and I see these artists that can draw beautifully, but I'm unimpressed because
they're not saying anything.
Yeah, they're not saying anything, or they're saying something that's been said,
yeah,
you know, 100 times before by other people better, you know. Yeah, that's a good point.
The other thing I would add in there, and it just really quickly, is to be conscious of the style that you have that should be slowly starting to emerge. We did a really good, essentially a podcast, but it's a YouTube video, or not? I guess it's on our website, the Finding Artistic Style.
Yeah.
The idea there is again not like what Lee and Jake are saying. Is you definitely want to separate yourself from what's being done. So you want to know what's being done. You want to consume what's being done, but you also want to really start developing your own ideas. And without going into it, because we did a whole thing on that. If you watch that, it'll tell you how to develop that style. But that's so important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. So your phase three now is I want you to start thinking about making an actual product from what you're doing. If you're wanting to get into comics, this is where you actually kickstart your comic. You start drawing pages. You start making a thing. and you either Kickstart it or you sell and print and sell like your own book. If you're an illustrator, I want you to actually make an illustrated book that, whether it's through a publisher or not, it's something that you've created that comes from you. And the reason for this, even if you're, you know, if you're getting into concept art and you want to work for a film, concept out like your own idea. Okay, so you're taking your story ideas, you're taking the things that you've been sketching out for the last, all through phase two, and in phase three, you're making it reality. And the reason for this is, number one, it shows you and it teaches you how to start a project and finish a project. And that's more important than starting it, is actually finishing a project, not just having this thing drag on. And the reason you want to have an actual product that you've made is because that suggests a finality to it. If it's just a project, you know, it could go on forever. But if you have, if your goal is to make, print a book and sell it, then you know you're done once you've printed that book and sold it. Okay. What that's going to teach you not only is how to finish, but it's going to teach you a little bit of marketing. It's going to teach you a little bit of the behind the scenes of production. It's going to teach you how to be a salesman. Marketing and sales are two things. Marketing is just getting the word out there. Salesmanship is closing the deal. You're just going to put you in touch with the whole production line, who prints things, how to get a thing printed, and what to look out for, and when things screw up, how to fix it. And all of that's going to help you when you go into whatever professional field that you want to get into. Because you've done it, you know that when you're talking to an editor and they outline, you know, a timeline for your project, you can just be more educated and understand what's going to be happening behind the scenes. I remember I did some books in publishing before I ever printed my own books, or before I ever did Kickstarter, and I really didn't understand the big picture of it all. Had I Kickstarted a book first and then went into publishing and worked with those, I would have realized, okay, even though I'm working with a publisher, there's still so much more resting on me to market this book and to share this book and to understand what I need to do to prep for printing this book and things like that. So that's your year three, is focused on putting everything that you've learned and everything that you're creating, stories and everything, and making an actual something from it. What do you guys think?
Perfect. That's awesome. I'd add one little thing, and that is, to start peppering in maybe some contests and enter something. I mean, basically it speaks to the same thing Jake's saying, is put yourself out there and, you know, step up to the plate and go for it and try something and see how it goes. And that has a powerful emotional effect on you, that you're basically saying, like, say you enter a contest online, art contest, you're saying, this is the best I got right now. This is the best I can do. And here it is, world. You know, hope you like it. And then once that's done, it's so weird. And I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but once you do that and then you move past it, I mean, it really does just kind of move you up, like a stair step is kind of an analogy, is I've been done with that one and that's as good as I could paint and that's as good as I could draw and storytell. And then the next one builds a little bit better versus having all these things that are just sitting in a drawer that don't go anywhere. We used to have a day in school where it was a portfolio day, and that's how you applied for scholarships. So everybody got this real estate on the wall, and it was the whole school wide, and like 10 illustration instructors walked around and they judged your work. And I always found it was always so nervous and so difficult to get the work ready for that and frame it and whatever, present it well and go to school and hang it. And then when it was done, I had this moment of exhaustion and kind of relief. And then that whole body of work I could put away and say, where am I going to go next? You know what I mean? It was very official feeling. Whereas people who didn't enter, they didn't kind of have those moments of finality, I guess, and stair-stepping.
That's true. That's a good way. I mean, I guess the point of this is to teach yourself how to finish and present something. So if it is a contest, that's another great thing to do. And I think part of that contest thing and part of doing your book and things like that also helps you flesh out a network. Because if you're going to be successful in this career that you're embarking upon, you have to know people in that career and you have to be a part of the world that's doing that. And the best way to do that is to make something and put it into that world And the people who see that are going to want to know who made it. They're going to know a little bit more about you. And you can use that as a calling card to start building out a network of people that you're going to need, both who are on the same level as you, who are above you, and also people who are below you as well, as far as where they're at in their careers. And you'd be surprised at what kind of jobs come your way from all three of those types of things. If someone above you hears about you and thinks, oh, I want to throw this person a bone because I really like him and I see what they're doing, you know, that's a good way to get work. Someone on your same level just might not have enough time to do everything that's on their plate. So they may say, I've got a job coming in. You might be the perfect guy for it. Are you available? Right. And then you'd be surprised who follows your work, who maybe aren't even professionals, but they have connections as well. And they have opportunities and things that they want to do as well. So start building out that network by making things and putting them out into the world.
Very good. Can I add one thing here?
Mm-hmm.
The part where you have at the bottom there on, I guess it's the bottom for us, but for listeners, it's just floating around in the study a film a week, study a graphic novel, study a book a week. That is the part, and I can speak to this because I ignored that. I had this crazy idea that if I looked at other people's work, I would be copying them. You know, I would just become them, and I wanted to be original. And I think that the ideal of wanting to be original is very noble, but originality comes from taking and combining and looking and paying attention and studying. And I just needed someone to grab me in school and explain that to me, you know, and I would avoid a lot of times. I missed a lot of really good visiting lecturers, visiting artists, because I thought, well, I'll go make art instead. I'll use this time to make art. And, you know, and what I was really doing was going the long way around the barn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's so important that aspect. I can't say that enough.
Yeah, keep feeding yourself. Yeah, all creativity is connecting dots. You know, connecting dots that other people didn't think to connect. And in order to connect dots, you have to have dots in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not filling your brain, I call it the creative bank account. If your creative bank account is dry, you have no creative capital to work with. You have no dots to connect.
Yeah. Go my goal is when you see a piece of my art is to just, I want you to just like it, but you don't know who I was looking at that day, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to conceal all of my influences. Sometimes if you're paying attention, you might see some of them, but most of the time I'm combining enough things that you'll have no idea how I connected those dots and got where I got.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right. Is there anything else we want to add to this thing? I just want to, if not, I want to close out with this question.
I have one more thing.
It's
a question. It's not an additional thing to add to the list.
Let's do it.
A lot of people may be listening, since this topic is on coming to art, maybe a little bit older, or a different age than 22 to 25. I can just imagine somebody listening and saying, you know, I'd love to do this list that you're talking about. I've got a job and I've got kids and I've got a wife or a husband and how should we speak to that at all? Like, how are you going to organize this if they can't draw 4 hours a day because they're at a 9-to-5 job? And, you know, just should we talk to that at all?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so. Here's what I say about that. This is going to be tough love, Jake.
Uh-oh.
You have 4 hours in a day, okay? You're at work for 9 hours, maybe 10 hours, okay? There's 14 hours left in the day. 14 hours. Maybe you shave off an hour of sleep. Maybe you cut out all of the... Like, if you've watched an entire series on Netflix, then you have time to focus on your career in art.
Those are harsh realities we don't necessarily want to hear, Jake.
Listen, it really comes down to what do you want to sacrifice? Now, I don't think you should sacrifice family, and I don't think you should sacrifice your job, but there's some things that you should sacrifice in order to go down this path. And I think it also involves a very serious conversation with your your spouse or your significant other or whoever is in your life that this is going to affect with you spending more time doing this. And the discussion just goes like this: hey, this is something I feel really strongly about, and I want to devote this amount of time with it, but I don't want it to come, you know, let's work out a plan where perhaps, you know, Thursday, Friday nights are spent doing this, but you get me Saturday and Sundays, you know, or maybe there's 4 or 5 hours you can work on the Saturday and just say, this is my time. You're going to have to work that out.
That's the important part is coming up with a schedule, whatever works for you. If it's not 4 hours, maybe it's two. I mean, you can get so much done in 2 hours a day. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you say, oh, well, I'll come to the art when I finish my job and having dinner with my kids and doing homework and spending time with my wife, I'll do it after all that. Believe me, that time will never, ever come. And right. So, and Jake and I were having this conversation the other day. Jake's getting up at, what is it, 4 a.m. right now to finish your mm-hmm. Sky Heart. And I'm getting up. I get up every day at 5 o'clock anyway, because I know from like 5:30 to about 9:30 or 10, I can do a ton of work on my children's books and nobody's going to mess with me during that time. That's
nothing time scheduled. Where
I just, just for that. And I prioritize it. And then, you know, the rest of the day just falls apart no matter how much I try to plan it. But that mm-hmm. grouping of hours, stuff happens and I finish things, and Jake does too.
It's three words: pursuit of happiness. you know the story, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I can't remember.
It's how
the name
Will
of the...
Smith became successful, right?
Well, Will Smith played the character. I can't remember the name of the character, but I mean, like, the thing that impressed me is like, that guy was so driven that he was willing to drink less water, to have to go to the bathroom less, to get more calls made at work, right? He was trying to prove himself. He was trying to get this full-time position.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you have to ask yourself at some point, like, how bad do you want something? You know, I always go back to, you know, I said I wanted to play the guitar. For years I said, I want to learn to play the guitar. I had a guitar. Never learned to play it. Did I really want to learn how to play the guitar?
No.
No. I didn't sacrifice for it. I didn't prioritize for it. Therefore, I didn't really want to play the guitar.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you play the guitar now?
I play the bass.
All right. And you know what? He practices.
I practice every day now, but now I've afforded myself more time mm-hmm. to do that. And I enjoy playing the bass more anyway. Guitar sucks.
Is it too late to become a bassist?
No. Yeah, that's true. In 5 years, I might be running off with some band, so.
No, but that's a good, I'm glad you brought that up, Lee. Like, you know, this is all part of your making your life work for you. And I assume because you're thinking about shifting your career or coming to this, it is to round out or improve your life to some degree. And that you can't have good things without some sort of sacrifice or some sort of skin in the game. So,
and other people have done it, you know, speaking to Jake's, mm-hmm. You know, some of the examples Jake was given in the beginning of this podcast, Yuko Shimizu, if you guys know her story, she was, if you guys don't know her, the listeners out there, you look her up, Yuko Shimizu. She's a fantastic, very fierce illustrator. She's wonderful. And she had a full-time corporate gig. She came into it late, like I did. And she, you know, learned her craft. She kept the corporate job while she was going through it, exactly like what we're talking about here. And then when it finally, you know, there was a certain point where the tipping point came where she said, I'm going to go for it. She quit the corporate job. And now she's a, not only an illustrator, but she's kind of a premier illustrator. She teaches at mm-hmm. School of Visual Arts in New York, and she has all these A-list clients. I mean, she's not your everyday success mm-hmm. story. She's fierce and she did it. So
that's cool. Well, should we wrap it up?
Yep.
Let's wrap.
All right. So before we go, every week we are not every week, whenever we post these podcasts, we want to talk about what we're doing ourselves as creators, what projects we're working on. So last time we talked about, I had mentioned I was finishing up Skyheart, and I have now it's about 60 pages left to color. So I'm over halfway done coloring. And I don't think I was that far last time we talked, but it is coming quite along. It's been really cool to see these colored pages. And what I went and did yesterday or 2 days ago was picked out two or three of my favorite pages. I was just going to work up to them, but I thought I'm going to do these right away and have them as more like show pieces that I can use to promote the book before I finish it all. Maybe put these pieces in a little trailer I want to cut together of it, and then use them as like a benchmark for the rest of the pages surrounding them as well. So that's where I'm at with Skyheart.
Cool.
I'm still working on, I'm doing the picture book right now on some tricky subject matter. And so what I do with this, anytime actually I'm dummying up a book, what I do is I do all the sketches, get them all kind of laid out, and nothing's in stone yet. It's just kind of rough layouts and roughly almost like a storyboard, what's going to happen on each page. And then I pick three kind of key beats from the story or difficult passages, and I go ahead and do an illustration of those passages, because that's going to set the tone for the rest of the book. So I go ahead and do the finished illustration to see where the problems might be, or if there's going to be some difficult storytelling, how am I going to handle that in these spreads? And that way I don't just start with page one, finish it, then go to page two, three, finish it. I mean, I used to do that when I first started, and it's a disaster because you don't work out where the problem spots are in the story. So that's what I'm doing this now, is figuring out which of those pages is the one that needs that love and that care. And then I'm going to do some finished illustrations and then go back to the dummy with that information that I learned.
Cool.
Great. So I am wrapping up the recording on my texture painting class for svslearn.com. And I just finished up my Alice in Wonderland series that I sell prints of at conventions for this year's convention season.
Yeah, those turned out awesome. They look really cool.
And I sent off artwork this morning for Tio Conejo y Tio Lobo. It's a children's book story for Houghton Mifflin.
Cool.
You're almost done with that?
I just sent it off today.
Yeah. You sent it off the whole thing?
Yeah. Well, it's part of a storybook, so it's not a feature length book.
How many illustrations was it?
It was only five.
Oh, okay. I was like, man, you knocked that out fast.
Was it in your pencil style or your painting style?
No, it was in the painting style. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, that is it for the 3-Point Perspective podcast. This podcast is made possible by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Your hosts have been Will Terry. You can find his work at willterry.com. His Instagram account is WillTerryArt, and please check out his YouTube videos. Those are pretty fun to watch as well. Lee White, you can find his work at Lee White Illustration, and also see his work on Instagram at Lee White Illustration as well. And then I'm Jake Parker. You can see my work at MrJakeParker.com. On Instagram, I'm at Jake Parker, and I'd appreciate it if you checked out some of my YouTube videos as well on YouTube. Just do it. YouTube video, or I mean Jake Parker search on YouTube. Did you guys have anything you wanted to add to that?
Okay. Only my Instagram is Lee White Illo.
Oh, it's Lee White Illo. Shoot. Okay, I'm going to switch that on the show notes. For some reason, I thought that's tight actually, you know, that's smart to have it be the little bit shorter, condensed version, Lee White Illo. You might want to think about that for your .com too, huh?
Yeah, maybe. Long.
All right. Okay, if you like this episode, please share it around, subscribe to it on iTunes, and leave a review. We'd love to hear what you think. If you're wanting to join in on this discussion, log on to svslearn.com on the forums that we have there. There's a link to the forums where we're going to have this podcast posted in its own thread. Chime in over there and let us know what you think. If you started your illustration career late, what challenges are you having? What challenges did you face? We'd love to hear that. All right. Thanks, everybody, and see you next time.